Hello and welcome to Critical Line Item. My name's Tom Ravlich. Thank you so much for joining me for this particular podcast. And one of the most important things about the current state of the federal parliament in Australia is that we have a range of independent influences, both in the House of Representatives and up in the Senate, looking at issues from a slightly different perspective. And one of those issues is procurement. And how the impact of that in the small business space. And joining me to talk about that and other inquiries in which he has a profound and valid interest is Senator David Pocock, Senator for the Australian Capital Territory, the ACT. David, thank you for joining me.
Hey Tom, great to be with you.
Now, you've been involved along with Senator Richard Colbeck, Senator Barbara Pocock, and Senator Deborah O'Neill in the inquiry looking at, consultants that engage with government in the procurement space. You've spent the past couple of years in Parliament looking at that. So can you describe what you've noticed in the past couple of years as you've looked at that issue in the parliamentary sphere?
Sure. Yeah, that committee that's been looking at consultancies and their interaction with government after the revelations about PwC and them using confidential information, I think shows the Senate at its best when you've got, Senator Colbeck from the Libs, Senator Deb O'Neill from Labor, Senator Barbara Pocock from the Greens, all really digging into an issue. Yes, from different perspectives, but you witness a lot of collaboration, a genuine just care for our democracy and wanting better processes in place. And I think this the consultancy part of procurement is critical because it provides a whole bunch of services, information that then ultimately dictate government policy. And as we saw at PwC, you've got these consultants with access to information that no one else has, that they're sort of getting behind the scenes and working with government. Having said that, consultancies and government services is just one part of procurement. If you look at procurement across the board, we're talking $70 billion a year that the government procures goods and services. And I'm arguing that we should be better at spending that money, better at getting value for money, but at the same time, looking at things like retained economic benefit. So investing in Australian companies, sovereign Australian companies that are building up their capability in a whole range of industries from defense to quantum computing. We need to ensure that we're investing in them and not just going with multinationals.
You've said a bit about small business and procurement, particularly in your electorate being Canberra. And what are some of the challenges that smaller entities face in competing with larger firms?
One of the things I've loved is getting out and meeting people, talking to Canberrans, meeting small businesses who are doing really innovative, in many instances, world-leading things. And what I hear from them all too often is, I don't want another government grant opportunity. I want to be able to sell to the government. I want the government as a customer. And you speak to too many companies that have to first sell to the US or the UK governments before they'll get a foot in the door with the Australian government. And that's just ridiculous. And so we've got the situation where people making procurement decisions, one, I'd argue, don't have enough information in front of them to make those decisions. We know that when you go to make a procurement decision, you know nothing about that company's past performance, whether they delivered on time, what the standard of work was. You can't see what other departments have been doing with that company. And it lends itself to a system where people are just going for what they think is the safe bet, which is the big multinational that everyone knows their name. In reality, what's then happening is that multinational is often skimming the cream off the top and subcontracting that to smaller Australian companies to help deliver that capability or that service. That's a ridiculous use of taxpayer money. We should have a system where smaller companies can compete, they can win contracts. And I'd argue that that isn't riskier. We've seen the huge failure of some of the multinationals and the Big Four to actually deliver for the government. If you're a smaller company, your name is on the line. If you don't deliver that, that's a huge chunk of your business. And so there's a real incentive to deliver on time, on budget, because you know that if you don't, you're unlikely to get more work. But we've been rewarding failure in some of the multinationals. They get these contracts and then they're kind of set up and then they get contract extensions, through that Senate committee that we talked about earlier. You've seen examples where a consultancy firm gets $700,000 and all they deliver is a 12-page PowerPoint. Like there's nothing really delivered. There's just too many examples of it not working. And so I'm pushing the government through this inquiry and then through a sovereign tech Senate inquiry that I got up last year, to actually find a way to invest in Australian companies and to have a procurement process where smaller players don't get overlooked.
Can we explore a point you've just raised in the last answer? One of the things you've said that the larger firms have sort of underperformed in various circumstances, they haven't delivered. Yeah, to what extent does the public service need to get better at identifying problems in contract delivery and better managing this? Because on the one hand you've got firms that are doing work, on the other hand you've got the recipient of the end product, whatever it happens to be. Is there a need to build capacity in the public service to be able to better manage the contractors to ensure that the work that needs to get done, that has been contracted for, is actually done and delivered on time?
For sure. There's a lot of work to do there. And I think, the government and senior public servants have acknowledged that in various ways. Firstly, you've got to start off with the information that someone has when they go to make that decision.
Okay.
And potentially, a step back from that is maybe the kinds of projects. So rather than rolling a whole heap of capability into one big project that clearly is going to favor one of the big primes, breaking up that work into more manageable parts to then
Okay.
go out. But then clearly information that people have, the Oztender system, we've had a bit of a play around with it. It's not well, it doesn't work that well. If is my view, there's a lot of work to be done there. And when these decisions get made, they should have all that information at hand. What's their previous performance like? Have they come in on time, on budget? Have there been any concerns raised around probity and the use of sensitive information. And then one of the other issues that I think we really need strong leadership from the government and senior public servants on is the number of companies that are working what they call above the line. So when the government's scoping out a project, they may get a consultancy in to help them figure out exactly what capability they need, what that looks like, what should actually go out to tender. And then in a scary number of cases, that same company is then essentially bidding for that work below the line. So you help create this tender that goes out. And then when it goes out, you say, oh, actually, I can deliver that capability that I helped you write the terms
Specifications
for.
for.
And so this, above the line and below the line work, in my mind, has to end. There's just too many concerns around conflicts of interest, and I don't think it cuts it. It cuts it. Defence has recently announced that they will rule out using companies above and below the line. I think that's a good move. I've been asking the Department of Finance whether they will go down that path as well. I think that's a good start to.
So what you're basically looking at a situation where if an entity comes in and does the work with government to scope a project, that is, they get the policy type scoping work, that they then do not get a contract to deliver on elements of the thing that they have scoped.
Yeah, I mean it seems reasonable to me. This was an issue that I was unaware of before I got into the Senate, and just looking at it just doesn't cut it for me. I think most people would say if you're helping to frame the problem and shape what the government's asking for, and this is the thing that you ask. I've been asking all of the Big Four about this in that Senate committee, and they all say, well, of course we've got the right probity measures in place, and we're not using that information when we go to then put in a tender for that work below the line. But you've got to take that with a grain of salt, given the issues we saw with PwC, and then the behavior we've seen from some of the senior leadership in these consultancy firms through the Senate committee process. It is very hard to argue that they have not misled the Senate on a number of occasions and shown, what I think borders on contempt for senators really trying to dig into this. So I just don't accept some of those, I guess, justifications put forward by companies that are benefiting from doing above and below the line work.
Before we touch on the other two inquiries that you've been material in instituting, just to cover them up, is there anything you particularly like about some of the reforms that the departments are putting in place? Have you had a look at the draft supplier code of conduct, for example? And its provisions. What are your thoughts about where finance is at on that score?
I think there's some good things in the works. I would argue that off the back of the PwC tax, don't know what you call fiasco, and everything that else that has come to light since then, and I think just the constant string of projects that don't get delivered on time, there's extensions. I think there's it's very it's warranted that we have broad reform when it comes to procurement. And so I'm pushing the government to be more ambitious to ensure that we do have a procurement system that delivers not just value for money, but delivers retained economic benefit. How much of the money that we spend, of that 70 billion that we spend every year, is being retained in Australia, in our communities, is building the kind of capability that we want and will need here in Australia going forward? So, I think there's been some movement, to her credit. Minister Gallagher wants to do things in this space, and that's a conversation I'll continue to have, and I guess prosecute it at every turn, just why this is in the interests of all of us to have a procurement system that builds local capability.
If we can flip to the sovereign tech inquiry now, why is that inquiry necessary in your view?
This is just follows on from the things that we've been talking about, and my earlier sort of observation that there's a whole heap of Australian companies who develop technology or a product, but they go to the Australian government not interested. They then are selling to, British Defence Department. And they go there and they say, "Well, why aren't you selling to the Australian Defence Force?" And they say, "Well, we haven't been able to." Once the British are then, buying that product, then all of a sudden Australia is interested. Why are we in a situation where we're not looking at Australian companies and saying, "Well, what have you got? How can we use some of your technology?" I think another example is what's happening in the quantum space. We have some genuinely world-leading companies here in Australia.
Yeah,
The
and
government's sort
researchers.
of and researchers, just here in the ANU, you've in Canberra, you've got the ANU that's spun out a number of quantum companies, and that yet you look at the government's first sort of big play in procurement when it comes to quantum, and they've gone with an American company, which it doesn't make sense to me to put money into research and to be saying all these things about wanting Australian made and all these things, but then to have a procurement system that doesn't actually prioritize Australian made, Australian sovereign tech. And so I'm hoping through the inquiry we can just shine a light on this and see like what is happening and what can be done to actually develop that sovereign capability here when it comes to things like AI, things like quantum.
Do we have a cultural cringe when it comes to looking at local companies? Because, but in our conversation this morning, from the points you've made with the Colbeck inquiry into consulting firms and government procurement, and with the sovereign, with the sovereigns of software capability, is there a cultural cringe here? Is there some kind of, issue whereby, the prophet is never welcome in his own village or in his own region until there's a success somewhere somewhere else.
Well, I think it's a real issue. We do have this, seem to have this culture when it comes to procurement that big multinationals are better, are safer. I just don't see that backed up by evidence. And you talk to Australian companies that, go to the US and want to sell to government there, they are so clear about their preference for American companies. In many instances, you've then got to partner with a US company and have, 51% US shareholding to be able to sell a whole range of things to the US government. Whereas you come here, you get an ABN, which I assume most multinationals who operate in Australia have, and then all of a sudden you're an Australian company. It's laughable. And for a country that I think is guess really proud of how Australia bats above its, sort of fights well above its weight on the world stage and contributes in a whole range of areas from science to sport. When it comes to actually backing that through our procurement system, we're not doing it. And so I would love to see a bit more. I don't know. I mean, I think this is one area where there should be Australian pride, and we should be saying, hang on, if an Australian company can do this, let's back them. Let's back that company and give them a go at it, rather than just going for these big multinational firms who tragically, in so many instances, then subcontract Australian companies to do parts of it.
We've spoken about the procurement side of your committee activity. You've got another one, and that is, and it may also be to do with procurement of other things, and that is the issue of lobbyists and access to Parliament. I've had a look at some of the submissions. There's quite a few submissions in that committee. What inspired you to, get concerned about the issue?
Well, before I got into politics, I was frustrated, like many people, looking at decisions that were being made that just don't seem to go with any evidence base, that clearly don't seem to be in the best interests of Australians. And you got to ask, why is that happening? And I think most Australians probably just assume that we have, practices in place that mean that we're probably better than the US when it comes to access from lobbyists and transparency. But we're not. We are so bad when it comes to lobbying. I don't know what any sort of transparency and having systems in place. Yes, we've got the lobbyist register, but really, from all the questions I've asked, it seems like the worst thing that can happen to you if you breach the lobbying code of conduct is a 6 month sit on the sidelines where you're not allowed to access Parliament House as a lobbyist
You mean
in many jurisdictions.
there's a 6 month sin bin.
And I don't even think I'm not even sure if they've used it. Like it doesn't seem to, in the US and the UK, there are civil, sometimes criminal penalties for not abiding by the lobbying code of conduct. So I think when it comes to the lobbyist code of conduct, yes, you have to register, but it's pretty loose. And I would argue that there should be stronger guidelines and consequences if you break sort of trust that is given to you by having that access. But the big issue for me is in-house lobbyists. There's zero transparency. When there's over 2,000 sponsored pass holders that have 24 hours a day access all areas, personal passes to Parliament House. And these 2,000 people, that's on top of staff, volunteers, family passes, they're all in separate categories. These are people who represent an organization or a company. And again, before I got into politics, I naively thought if you worked in government relations for Woodside or Santos or Qantas or Virgin, you were a lobbyist because you're clearly in there to lobby. They're not lobbyists. They are what they call in-house lobbyists, and they get around on sponsored passes. And during the big airline inquiry, it turns out that the Qantas government relations team have their sponsored passes from the current and former infrastructure minister who makes decisions that affect their industry. And I think access is a good thing. Like, you know, it's the people's house. There should be access. It's important to have stakeholders, you know, different groups in there when there's debate about policy that affects their members or
Gotcha.
them as a company. But there should be transparency. People should know who's in there.
Okay. You've been generous with your time. So what I'll do, we've got one more question. I mentioned earlier you've spent 2 years, almost 2 years in the Parliament. How have you found the experience from day one up to this point?
It's been a wild ride. I had no idea what to expect. Yeah, this is not something I ever thought I would be doing, but it is actually it's been a steep learning curve, but a lot of fun. You know, getting in there, representing community I love, and all these big issues, and really trying to find a way to bring, you know, people in our community's voices to the fore. We're facing some huge challenges as, you know, in our communities as a country and obviously globally. And so how do we ensure that decisions are being made with people in mind? How do we make politics about people? And, you know, I think as an independent, it's really invigorating to be able to just go in there and say what I'm hearing and look at, you know, evidence-based policy that's actually going to deal with some of these big issues and not have a party line to toe. So
But
yes, so
you,
far
but
frustrating at times, but there's some really good people in there from all, you know, all different parties.
you're right. I mean, I guess you mentioned that you make politics about people again, but I guess we could close on. Well, it's always about people. It's about whether it's about enough people.
I think that's the challenge, is how do we, I think one of the things that is a real challenge in here in Parliament is how do you get the major parties to lift their gaze beyond the next election? You know, how do we make decisions that are not just good for the next 2 years before the next federal election, but good for the next decade, the next 2 decades? You know, what's this going to mean for our great grandchildren? And I really fear that almost no one's thinking like that, because it's all the incentives are around just staying in power or getting into power rather than leaving a legacy and you know, looking ahead, dealing with problems that are coming up and turning them into opportunities for all of us. So if that's one of the things I think about is, yeah, how do we look further and do the right thing by Australians today, but also Australians in the future?
I've been talking to Senator David Pocock. He represents the ACT in the Federal Parliament. He's also involved in several interesting inquiries aimed at trying to resolve problems, stupid procurement, and trying to make people a bit more accountable up on the Hill. David, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tom. Really good to chat.
Thank you.